Das Grüne Währing.
Ein Podcast der Währinger Grünen.
Mit Raphael Anschei.
Und Marcel Kneu. Herzlich willkommen bei einer neuen Spezialfolge unseres Podcastes Das Grüne Währing. Wir schauen diesmal wieder über die Grenzen unseres Bezirkes hinaus, diesmal sogar relativ weit bis nach Belgien, ganz konkret nach Gent, denn aus dieser Stadt kommt unser heutiger Gast, Dirk Hohlemans. Er ist dort bei den Grünen engagiert und wird uns erzählen, was die Grünen so in den letzten Jahren in dieser Stadt in einer Koalitionsregierung bewegt, verändert haben. Das Gespräch, das im Anschluss an eine deutsche Einführung auf Englisch stattfindet, führt Andreas Novi.
Herzlich willkommen. Mein Name ist Andreas Novi. Ich bin Professor an der Wirtschaftsuniversität, habe 1987 die Währinger Grünen mitgegründet und war dann lange auch Obmann der Grünen Bildungswerkstatt. Bei der Gelegenheit habe ich auch Dirk Hohlemans kennengelernt, der von unserer Partnerorganisation, den flämischen Grünen in Belgien, die Leitung übergehabt hat. Oikos heißt unsere Partnerorganisation in Belgien. Dirk Hohlemans ist heute in Wien, weil er gestern an einer großen Konferenz zum Thema Alltagsökonomie im Wiener Rathaus teilgenommen hat, das die Wirtschaftsuniversität zusammen mit der Stadt Wien, der Vizebürgermeisterin Maria Vassilakou, organisiert hat. Und Dirk Hohlemans war dort einer der Hauptvortragenden. Dirk Hohlemans ist nämlich viele Jahre lang Fraktionsvorsitzender der Grünen in Gent gewesen. Und Gent ist eine Stadt, die man durchaus als eine grüne Stadt bezeichnen kann. Die Grünen regieren da schon einige Jahre und haben vor wenigen Wochen bei den Gemeinderatswahlen wieder einmal mehr einen Erfolg eingefahren und über 20% der Stimmen erzielt. So wie allgemein die Wahlen in Belgien, die Gemeinderatswahlen, ein großer Erfolg für die Grünen waren. Mehr als 25% der Stimmen in Brüssel, mehr als 18% in Antwerpen. Daher nützen wir die Gelegenheit, jetzt auf Englisch ein Gespräch mit Dirk Hohlemans zu führen über die Erfolge, die Herausforderungen der Grünen in Belgien und ganz speziell in Gent. Herzlich willkommen. Welcome, Dirk Hohlemans.
Thank you.
Dirk, I think the best thing is that you start presenting yourself and you work in Gent.
Okay, so as you already said, I'm director of Oikos. It's a green foundation in Flanders, the Dutch-speaking part of Belgium. And what we try to do is to have more the ecological perspective introduced in the public debate. We do that by organizing lectures, congresses. We publish books that maybe first were published in German or English. For instance, we translated the book of Harold Welzer, Selbstdenken, in Dutch, and he came to Belgium. Our focus is on two domains. One is the ecological economy. The other is citizens' collective commons. Our foundation is now 8 years old. Besides, we also have a journal, Oikos, which already exists for 20 years. And I'm also, for now, around 20 years involved in local politics in Ghent. And indeed, the last 6 years, we were for the first time in the city government, 2013 until now. And in 2012, so the end of 2012, we went to the elections together on one list with the socialists. And we had a real electoral success. We got even a majority of the seats in city council with this list. But we still decided to keep the liberals on board of the coalition they were before in government, and in Ghent it are rather, let's call them social liberals, so you can work well with them together. And we developed a new project for the city, which from the beginning we said it's not possible to realize it in 6 years. You have a kind of future projects. It was based on three what I would call carrying concepts. One is a child-friendly city. The second is a climate-neutral city. And the third is sustainable mobile city. These were really three core concepts. And we were able to have three aldermen that precisely had competencies in these fields. And so in the different fields, we worked very hard. I cannot, of course, talk about all our achievements, but the most, let's say, visible and the most contested in a way was we really changed the mobility system of the city.
That's really interesting for the audience in Währing, because here that's also a very contested policy field.
Okay, let's say a starting point, it was clear that there had to be done something. There were every year more and more traffic jams in Ghent, and the system that was introduced at the end of the 90s, having a few underground parkings and then less parkings on the ground and a kind of small circulation route, routing people to these parkings, it didn't work anymore. It was all crowded. So I think it was a good starting base, because there was a kind of agreement there has to happen something. But then we devised a very ambitious plan where the core idea is that you cannot drive through the city anymore with your car. So to put it in a kind of visual, it's like a pizza. Your city is like a pizza, and you have different slices. And if you enter from the ring such a slice, you also have to get out through this slice. So you cannot drive from one slice to the other with your car. You have to first get out again to the ring. And of course, this was the most visible part, but it was, of course, together with a lot of other actions, like making parkings much more expensive.
What does this mean? How expensive is it?
Parking your car?
Yeah.
It depends where you are, but in the center of the city, it will be now something like €3 for an hour. And then the more you go to the outskirts, it's getting cheaper. But also a lot of investments in bicycle infrastructure. We, for instance, introduced what we call biking streets. A biking street, there people on a bike have priority. So cars have to stay behind it. So it's really a change for people driving a car. But as more and more people are using the bike, it's becoming even a necessity. One of the problems was that in busy streets with shops, there were new conflicts between pedestrians and people cycling. So we had to devise special cycling routes. And so between 11 and 7, some shopping streets, you cannot drive with your bike there. We also introduced park and rides outside the city. And then with tram or with bus, you can enter the city very fast. And so we had a lot of discussion. We introduced it April 2017, which is not so long ago. And 1 year later, the results are really astonishing. We have 25% more cycling, 10% more users on public transport, and 12% less cars in the city. And for me, the most astonishing is the sound of the city changed. Now you're walking in streets and you're people passing by on their bike, and you can understand what you're saying. Before, it was this kind of noise of cars. And so I think the overall quality of life really has gone up enormously. Of course, some people were against it, because if you devise such a system, this system of what I call pizza slices, you need sometimes to cut a street in two. And so you're not allowed to pass through the street anymore with your car. Of course, buses and taxis still can. So of course, some shopkeepers, some inhabitants were not happy. Of course, the opposition parties were shouting that Ghent has become unreachable. But in the end, and so the day we introduced the plan, everyone was like, journalists were waiting, now we're going to see chaos. But chaos didn't happen because we also, in a very serious way, used a mathematical model for traffic flows and adapted. We did a lot of micro adaptations to squares and other things, so really to be able to have the flows going in the most optimal way. So we still have some traffic jams on our ring, but we had them before and they're still there because there are too many cars. But I think the quality of life and also the safety in the streets for people on their bicycle really has gone up a great deal.
But just going one step back, who were the main supporters of this this initiative and how was opposition organized? Because that's really interesting for us.
I think a few elements. First, there was already a kind of legacy of policies promoting bicycle use. It's already now many years ago, but we had in the 90s a socialist mayor who already used his bike every day. So you already had this image that it's normal to use your bike even if you're a mayor. We have a quite strong environmental movement in Ghent who really supported it. Who was against it? Certain organizations of shopkeepers. But the interesting thing is that the strongest opposition party, right wing, they tried to collect enough signatures to have a referendum. And they tried to collect them more than a year and they were not able to have enough signatures. You could say, of course, this could indicate that they are not so well organized. But I think at the same time, again, being a progressive city, having a legacy of already bicycle-friendly policies, I think a lot of people, especially families with children, were quite in favor. Because also, and that's also one of the reasons why the Greens did very well a month ago, is that the issue of air quality is really central in the public debate. So a lot of people really are a bit anxious about what's the air quality in my street and what does it mean for my children. And so I think if you're able to link environmental issues together with health issues, a lot of people are interested and will support your policies.
And can you give some examples of, besides the reorganization, the overall reorganization of the mobility system, of ecological, climate-friendly strategies in the field of mobility or in other areas? Did you close streets in neighborhoods, things like this as well?
Another quite remarkable success was the concept of living streets. So we invited people to convince their neighbors to make their street during summer 1 or 2 months completely car free. And when I say completely, it's 100%. It's not at midnight I can still park my car in my garage. No, it's really streets are blocked, and then you can change your street in a park or in a, if you want a barbecue site, whatever. And this first year only two streets,
but it was only done if the population wanted it.
Yes, and I think this is really part of the success. If we would have decided top down from city council, we will make your street car free, I think a lot of people said, hey, why and who decided? But we invited people to convince their neighbors, then you get a horizontal dialogue instead of this top down communication, which makes also for people who are against it, it much more difficult to resist, because shouting that the politicians are stupid and they don't listen to you, that's we all know. But if all your neighbors are in favor, it's already another issue. Of course, if in the streets where it was a success, it was not supported by 100% of the people. We did research and we found out that, to put it a bit dark, black and white, male men above 65 driving with a car all their life are most of the time against it. City is changing. We have a lot of families with young children, so they are in favor, and it really changed the social interaction in these streets.
And how many living streets did you implement?
I think last time it were 7 or 8, but I'm sure it will be more the next time. But before you decide on it, of course, you have to organize it very well, because if there's no cars allowed in one street, of course, the streets besides will have more traffic. People, if they cannot drive with the car in their own street, they have to park in another street. So it's not just something funny. It's also kind of, you have to organize it in a very good way. And so you cannot start with 100 streets at the first time. You have to build this kind of, call it a movement, because it's really not just something playful. I talked with people living there. It really made people conscious that the street is not something for cars, but could be also a meeting place, opening up a lot of possibilities. Give one example, if I may. Somebody told me that they put a board on the street, very simple, with chalk, and somebody wrote the first week, I have a glass of wine here at 7 o'clock in the evening. Suddenly they were at 40 this evening, that evening. And so more and more people just wrote down, we will have a barbecue next Friday. Who will be there? Bring your own food. And so spontaneous self-organization gives rise to a lot of very interesting activities.
And that happened during summer holidays.
Yes. Yeah?
And you have 9 weeks of summer holidays as well. Mm-hmm. That's similar to Austria. Mm-hmm. We have it as well. What do you do with your children?
That's very interesting. And it's a kind of challenge, which of course is broader than only again. But as you said, we have 2 months of summer holidays for our children, 9 weeks. And on average, people have 3 weeks maximum holiday at their work. So there are 6 weeks to solve. Normally you look at public services or you look at the market to have a solution. Of course, you also have the grandparents. But and so indeed, the city of Ghent also organizes what we call kind of youth camps. You have now also companies that are offering, for instance, go to Spain and learn how to use a surf, go surfing, but then it's maybe 800 euros, so it's only for the rich. And so we had a very nice development of what you could call self-organization or commons. People said, what if we organize in our streets this summer camp ourselves, and every parent is willing to spend 1 day a week being a monitor, organizing little games and stuff like that. And it was a big success. So now in many places we have this kind of self-organized summer camp, and I find one of the most important things is that it's for free. It doesn't cost a euro, so everybody can participate. You only have to be willing to spend one day a week as a parent.
And what is the support by the municipality?
Most of the time it's about space. It can be municipality, but it also can be a school. A school is the building, the playground, that makes it, of course, easier. But you know, we did it in our street, and there was one person with a big house and a big garden. So it can also be on private ground.
And you said that you aimed at becoming a child-friendly city. Did you achieve this?
It is, of course, hard to measure, but there are a lot of things we try to change. For instance, if we redesign a park or a square, there will always be this question, what is there for children? Small children, a bit bigger children. And so you see more and more small playgrounds all over the city. Also, if you look at schools, playgrounds used to be deserts of stones, and so we had a program stimulating schools to change their desert of stones into a park, and then at the same time motivating them to open up to the neighborhood, this place. And so suddenly, even in housing blocks where before there was no little park, suddenly children had a little park. But it also goes, it's about parents with very, very little children, that they have a place. If a mother wants to give breast to a child, there are places for that. We invest a lot of schools for everybody, working on diversity. So it's a lot of things, but it's always the same perspective. This new development, is it child friendly?
Mm-hmm.
Which is then taken, you know, into account in all policy measures.
I want to take up a concept that you introduced yesterday at the conference. It's called public-civic partnership. I've known the concept of public-private partnerships when a corporation is building a school and then it's leasing it to the to the municipality, and that's a very bad business for the municipality. So there's a lot of criticism of public partnerships. What is a public civic partnership, and why do you promote this in Ghent?
Well, you already mentioned an important argument. We have the same public-private partnerships, companies building schools, leasing it, and then, for instance, in the end, it turns out that the association of the parents is not allowed to use the school in the evening because it's not in the leasing contract, and if they want, they have to pay for it. So it's really totally crazy. At the same time, and so this is, of course, part of this, let's call it, neoliberal agenda that was dominating the last decades, our policies on the, not only on the national level. What we see in Ghent for already many years is that a lot of citizens are taking a lot of initiatives in quite different domains, food, energy, sharing stuff, cars, bikes. We even have now a small organization where you can lease little bicycles for children, because of course they grow, and then this bicycle is too small, and so you can exchange this. And then, of course, with this new wave of commons, the question is coming up, how to redefine your governance model in order to work together with them, stimulate them, and not only from a kind of top-down model, maybe give them some subsidy if you like them. And so, to do it in a real profound way, we invited Michel Bouwens, who is an expert on commons peer-to-peer, to talk with these citizens and to write a kind of strategic report on how to reconceptualize policies. And so what I took out of it is, I think, instead of focusing on these public-private partnerships, I think we have to invent public civic partnerships, which means that public services work together with citizens association to deliver a certain good or service. To give one example, we have a very old and symbolic abbey in the city. Some say that Ghent was established there. And it was a museum until the 90s, but then there are only a few people going there because it was boring. And the people working there were, I guess, more sleeping than explaining things. So in the end, of course, the easiest thing from an austerity policy perspective is we close down everything. So it was closed for me for more than 5 years, but then the people living in the neighborhood said it's really a shame that one of the most symbolic places of the city is just not used, it's closed. And so they said, what if we would organize something, let's start on Sunday afternoon, small concert of the or things like that. And then they asked to the civil servant who is responsible for this abbey, belonged to the Department of Culture, could we have the key for one day and do something? And the guy said, yes, you can. And it proved to be a success, and suddenly every Sunday there was a concert. And then so after some months they asked, could we have the key on a permanent basis? And then the civil servant said, this I have to ask to my alderman. But the alderman said, yes, that's a great idea. And so there was a lot of trust, of course, also a bit of control. Of course, they also were there on Sunday to see, but then they noticed that this citizens group was able to really organize themselves, establish rules, how to do it. And then actually there was an older building close to the abbey from the 19th century, which was empty. The city was renovating it, and so this association said, could we also use this small building? And then the city said, you know what, you can have it on a permanent basis if you organize it in an open way. If people from the neighborhood or other want to do something there, you have to be really open. And actually it's now one of the most dynamic and thriving places of the city. And so the owner is the city, but the people who manage it is the citizens association. So for me, this is a perfect example of a public civic partnership.
So it's a partnership with the population. Yeah, you govern together with.
It's a group of citizens people that come together and have and define for themselves a certain goal. In this case, we valorize a very important cultural place in Abbey and allow and use it also as a space for new cultural events, very easy to, if you're a small group playing music and you say within 2 weeks we will want to give a little concert, they say yes, no problem, we will do it. You also have other examples. Some places there is a little park and there are some issues with safety in the park in the evening, and then we just put a gate and we give the key to the neighbors, and at 10 o'clock in the evening they close the park, and in the morning they open it. And this is a very small example, but it shows that it's a kind of trust. It's not, you don't want to, let's say, reduce public service. It's not about austerity, but it's about cooperation and making use of the qualities and the competencies of citizens. And we see that in many areas happening. So we can, instead of course, companies are necessary and they always will have a place in the city, but I think the future is to see what, how can you, and for that I use the concept of a partner state, how can you stimulate, respect and enhance the things citizens are willing to do. For instance, we have citizens that started Citizens Energy Corporation. And so now they are willing to put solar panels on schools. And so I find it really great. So the smartest thing is to help them. Because actually they are doing something that you should do from your climate policy perspective, but if they want to do it, work together.
And is this a trademark of the Belgium Greens, or is this very specific, this partnership approach to Ghent?
Well, maybe now for 1 minute I will not be so modest. We worked a lot on this concept with Oikos, our foundation. And we organized congresses and published stuff around it. And so last year there was a national congress of the Greens to redefine certain things. And so this concept of commons partner state is now really in the program of the Green Party. And there's a lot of interest in many cities to do it like this. And I think it's now the trademark of the Greens in Flanders all over. And also our French-speaking colleagues are doing the same. So it's a kind of establishing a link with what I would call a new emerging civil society. And I think it's the normal way to handle or to behave as a green politician.
Do you think this is specific to the Greens, or do you find this in other parties as well?
I think it's specific because, first of all, these new movements, I think it's no coincidence that a lot of people who are active in these new initiatives are also active in the Green Party. So this is kind of organic combination and link. And I noticed that for more traditional parties, they just don't know it. It's not part of their lifestyle. It's not part of their organization. But of course, now it's getting more and more also in the media. So also other parties are getting aware of it. But for them, it's hard to grasp this concept of partner state. For instance, for socialists, they really like to regulate everything, to control everything. And so, yeah, of course, a public civic partnership means that in a partnership, your partner has a lot of autonomy. And so it's not about top-down regulation. It's another model of governance. So for other parties, it's something more difficult. And for instance, for the Liberal Party, they're then asking, why don't you let the market organize this? So yeah, I think it's something typical for the Green parties.
And it is working, at least in Belgium. Currently, the Greens are so strong as never before, if I understand it correctly.
Yes. Has to do, I think, with several reasons. One reason is, as I said before, some issues like air quality and the effects of bad air on health is really central in the public debate. The other reason is that we have a very strong right-wing anti-migrant party in Flanders, and so the Greens are seen as the opposite. So you have two very clear visions on the future, which makes it for parties in the center, which have a more gray position, very difficult to be in the public debate. So I think what happens in Germany with the Greens and AfD, you see it on a smaller version also happening in Flanders. And we also, the Green Party also became much more professional concerning communication and marketing. Also, I think something that really makes a difference. And we have now already in several cities, vice mayors or aldermen showing that, yeah, Greens, they are able to govern. So the overall picture is of a more mature party with good ideas for the future, with people that are able to communicate these ideas in a very good way in the media.
The worrying thing is that if you look 5 years back, one could have said very similar things about the Austrian Greens. Yeah? We were in 6 regional governments and very successful electorally and definitively modernizing in communication and PR activities in general. But after this electoral disaster last year, it became clear that there was a really lack of a common narrative and a common identity, and the Austrian Greens are in search of finding this again. Do you have anything to recommend for us?
Sorry. That's of course a tough question, but I can say, and of course it's always easy to say it afterwards, but we saw it also in elections last month in Ghent. People don't like parties that have fights inside, because then it's hard to, how can you trust a party to govern your country if they're not able to work together internally? So what we saw in Ghent, that we were again on one list with the socialists, but they had a lot of problems internally, fights and scandals, and so they lost a lot of votes and seats. Well, and also typically in Ghent, the right-wing opposition party had also a lot of internal fights, and they also lost votes. So this is more on the level of, let's say, the perspective of the voter. I think the other thing is, it are quite insecure times. If you open the newspaper, you can read about climate change, you can read about refugees, you can read about digitalization, which will destroy jobs. So developing a narrative, a hopeful narrative, that without being, without lying, of course, because future is always open, but to say that we will deliver policies that make, will bring you freedom and security, I think this is a central message. Freedom, of course, that's typical for the Greens, emancipation, but also forms of security. So we developed, as Green Party in Flanders, policies. We made kind of first, not a real, we didn't promise a full basic income, but we developed a kind of something in between the current system, where a lot of people fall out of the system and still are poor, and a full basic income, but a kind of guarantee, kind of income guarantee. So
that's the Austrian Greens party proposal.
And I think such proposals are really very important if you live in a very volatile economy where you can lose your job very fast. These things are very important. The same thing is that the government changed the age for retirement from 65 to 67. And actually, it's quite fuzzy on whether this is the final stage, because some neoliberals say it should be 70, and we are clearly saying you have to be very clear that one, was the age of retirement, and two, you have to develop a model that allows people to combine their job with their family. And so also there, it's focused on quality of life. I think Greens are successful if they have trustworthy proposals that can enhance the quality of life.
Yeah, we are coming to the last section of our conversation. You are also member of the European Green Foundation, which is coordinating all national foundations like the Grüne Bildungswerkstatt. Next year there are European elections. You have a certain overview of European politics and green parties over Europe. What is your expectation for these elections?
if I would have a lot of knowledge in that and foresight, people would be willing to pay me a lot. But of course, the future is very insecure. It's clear that there are different currents in Europe. I don't have to explain you the Visegrad countries in the east. You have Macron in France, who started as the new god, but now is falling very fast off his throne. You have the end of the Merkel period. What you see, and I think that's interesting, that in some, let's call them core countries, Belgium, Germany, Netherlands, the Greens are very strong. And it's a combination of having a very good narrative and also good people. Also, I have the impression that in France, they are reorganizing themselves. So, and the polls are also going in the right direction. Also in Scandinavia, of course, every country is different. Sweden is not the same as Finland. But Greens are quite stable. For instance, in Finland, they're also having a great results in city elections. Then looking to the east, of course, their situation is very difficult. But you have a lot of interesting green ideas. The last 3 months, I was in Croatia. I was also in Macedonia, working, speaking on events on green ideas, and were a lot of people. So of course, in these countries they are really a minority, but to be able to establish a foundation and have successful events in really an hostile environment is quite promising. So I think yes, you can speak of really a European family, and my hope is that what you see in Germany or in Belgium, also in the Netherlands, the Greens as the hopeful narrative on the progressive side, the dominant force at the left, this would be my hope for the future.
Okay, so thank you very much, Dirk, for coming to Vienna and for coming to Währing to share your ideas. I hope we can take up some of the positive examples and some of the optimism. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Herzlichen Dank fürs Zuhören. Falls Sie Interesse haben an weiteren Folgen unseres Podcasts Das Grüne Währing, sei es, weil Sie wissen wollen, was wir in Währing so alles bewegen und verändern, oder weil Sie auf eine unserer weiteren sicher kommenden Spezialfolgen warten, dann können Sie uns abonnieren, entweder mit einer Podcatcher-App auf Ihrem Handy oder via iTunes oder Spotify. Dankeschön.